Hampshire Public Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. All this week, the presidential race has focused on one issue, Medicare, the popular federal health insurance program for older Americans. Charges have been flung back and forth, with both President Obama and Mitt Romney saying they'd preserve and strengthen Medicare while the other guy would gut it. But there's a larger and equally popular entitlement program that's received barely a mention in this campaign, Social Security. After President Bush's attempt to reform Social Security failed 7 years ago, office holders have been loath to touch this third rail of politics. But our guest today holds no such fear. Rather, he's hoping to put Social Security back on the agenda. We're talking this hour with Stephen Olemacher. He's a reporter with the Associated Press and author of a recent series on Social Security. Olemacher has long wanted to delve into this topic, hoping to answer questions common among the public, not to mention his own. Today in The Exchange, the future of Social Security. Let's hear from you. What problems do you see with this program? What changes do you think might fix it? If you receive Social Security benefits, what does this program mean for you? If you're younger, do you expect Social Security will be there to cover your golden years? Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. And Stephen Olemacher joins us from D.C. And Stephen, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, why do you suppose nobody's talking about Social Security this election year, especially given all the focus that the other two big entitlement programs, Medicare and Medicaid, are getting this year? Lots of talk about that. What do you think?
Well, Social Security is hard. It's not actually as hard to fix as Medicare or Medicaid, but when you look at the options for addressing Social Security, you know, they all come with political risks. They fall into two broad categories. You're either going to raise taxes, cut benefits, or do some combination of both. And none of those things are popular, and they all come with a lot of political difficulty. And I think, as you started to mention in your intro, you know, Social Security, you know, has long been known as the third rail of American politics. I'm not sure it still is, but it's a very important program, and you know, Americans have a very strong and emotional tie to the program. If you think about it, you pay payroll taxes throughout your entire career, you've earned those benefits, and when someone talks about perhaps cutting those benefits, that can be a problem.
Well, and hats off to you for doing this series, Stephen. And why did you decide to tackle this project, especially at this point in time in the middle of a heated presidential campaign?
Well, one of the things, you know, our AP members always talk to us about is they want stories that dive deeply into issues and explain issues, and because and important issues to the American public. Social Security affects nearly every American family. 56 million people get benefits. About 160 million people pay Social Security taxes. Social Security has long-term financial problems. It's not an immediate crisis. However, the problem is getting bigger, and it gets harder to fix the longer we wait to act. There is a good chance that Congress will try to address Social Security in the next year or so. However, you know, as you mentioned, until recently, Social Security has been largely absent from the presidential campaign.
Wow. So Congress might address this next year. Well, I want to talk to you about that later. But some of the numbers that you gave, Stephen, get into something that I want to get into now with you. The basic mechanisms of Social Security and how many people are involved in this system. You said 56 million Americans get benefits. 106 million Americans are paying Social Security taxes right now, including probably you and me. Just remind us how this works, Stephen.
Sure, sure. Yes, and it's actually about 160 million people paying taxes.
I'm sorry, 160. Well, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Sure, yes. So, one common misconception about Social Security is that you pay into it your whole life, and that money's being put away for you, and it'll be there for you when you retire. Actually, the way the system has been set up from the beginning is that people who work today and who pay taxes today are paying for the retirement and the benefits of people who are getting benefits today. So you and I are working and paying taxes to pay for the retirement of our parents and our grandparents. And when we retire, our children and grandchildren will hopefully be paying for our retirement. So Social Security is financed by a 12.4% tax on wages. It's actually 10.4 right now because there was a temporary payroll tax cut for last year and this year. But it's scheduled to go back to 12.4% next year. And so, you know, that money is raised. And you know, when you retire, actually, it's not just retirees. I mean, there's 56 million people who get benefits. It's like 36 million retired workers, almost 9 million disabled workers, their spouses, children, widows and widowers get benefits as well. So a lot of people get benefits. And, you know, benefits are calculated, you know, based on your wages and based on what you paid into the system over your career.
Now, that's interesting, too. So if I made, you know, $50,000 a year, I would get Social Security benefits based on that salary. If I got $100,000 a year, my benefits would be based on that salary. So if you have done pretty well financially in your life, you're going to do better financially under Social Security. Is that it?
Yes, that's right. The more you pay in, the higher your benefits. To a point, the benefits are capped, and that's in part because you know, the amount of wages that are subject to Social Security taxes is also capped. So Social Security taxes are only applied to the first $110,000 or so that a person makes in wages. So if you make more than that, you do not pay Social Security taxes on those wages. However, you also don't get any more credits towards your benefits for wages above that amount.
Now, I'm glad you explained that, because that's often a point of contention. People who make $50,000 say, hey, how come I'm paying 12.4% and the guy who's making $110,000 is also paying the same amount? So that's always been a question, why that cutoff. Can you explain that a little bit more, Stephen? You're going there, but some people say, hey, you know, you should tax somebody on their whole salary.
And sure, yes, and that is a bone of contention, and that's an issue going forward. I think, you know, the reason why it's evolved to the parameters that they have it today is that, you know, Social Security has been set up as an insurance policy, a wage insurance policy, and the feeling has been that if you make more than that, you don't necessarily need a larger benefit, and because your benefits are based on what you pay in, people who make more than that don't pay any more in, but they don't get any more of a benefit.
So that's the thinking for that that cap. Let me invite our listeners to join us, Stephen, and then many, many more questions for you. Our number here on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in The Exchange, our guest is Stephen Olemacher. He's an Associated Press reporter covering Capitol Hill, Social Security, and tax policy. He's been working on this summer a new series looking at the future of Social Security and some of the debates surrounding it. Join us with your questions or comments. What questions do you have about how this program works? What problems do you see with it? What changes do you think might fix it? If you receive Social Security, what does this program mean for you? And if you're younger, do you think Social Security will be there when you retire? Our number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. And Stephen, the demographics. For a long, long time, Social Security worked very well with its demographics, as you write. Up until the 1960s, Social Security was a great deal for most people. How come?
Well, because early on, there were a lot of workers for every person who got benefits. And, you know, back in 1960, there were five workers for every person getting benefits. And, you know, as the baby boomers are reaching retirement now, and they're, you know, leaving the workforce and leaving relatively fewer workers behind to pay into the system. Today, there are a little less than three workers paying into the system for every person getting benefits. That's a ratio that's projected to go down to less than two in about 20 years or so. So early on, you could have relatively low tax rates to pay for benefits because you're taxing a lot of workers and the benefits are going to a relatively small, you know, fewer people. So now that is shifting and we're getting more people getting benefits and less people paying in, over time they've raised taxes. Tax rates, you know, when Social Security was started back, the taxes were first imposed in 1937, it was 2%. Workers paid 1% and their employers matched it. In 1960, that was 6%. And, you know, as I said before, now it's, after the temporary tax cut expires, it's 12.4%. So the taxes have had to go up over time to pay the benefits of more and more people who are getting them.
Wow. So fewer people have to pay more. Not very comfortable for younger people to hear that, Stephen.
No. And in fact, you know, the issue going forward, you know, one of the first story I wrote in the series looked at, how much people pay in lifetime benefits and how much people get back,
right,
or how much people pay in lifetime taxes and get back in benefits. And what I found is that people retiring today are part of the first generation who have paid more in Social Security taxes than, during their careers than they will get in benefits after they retire. And that's because of this shift in demographics that's been happening over time. And as we look to the future, it's a shift that's only going to get worse because Social Security and its current structure of taxes and benefits is unsustainable past 2033. And therefore, something is going to have to happen in the next 20 years to change the system. And as I said before, there's two broad categories: raising taxes, cutting benefits, or doing some combination of both. And doing any of those things would only reduce the return that future retirees would get.
And we'll definitely get into that demographics equation and how it's weighing on the future viability of Social Security. But I'm just curious, real quick, Stephen, what did you hear from younger people who you interviewed for this series, their thoughts on Social Security?
Well, they do have a different opinion of Social Security than older folks. A lot of them have been scared into thinking that Social Security is just simply not going to be around for them when they get older. And it's interesting, when I talk to the experts, if you do look at the problems that Social Security has, a worst-case scenario, Social Security, we get to 2033, and that's when the Social Security surpluses are projected to be gone. The program will still collect enough tax revenue every year to pay 75% of benefits, and would for the rest of the century. So worst case scenario, they would get 75% of their benefits. So I think there's a misconception about young people that it will be gone. They do understand the idea, though, that they're probably not going to get as good a deal as their parents and grandparents got. I talked to actually one of my colleagues who helped me with some of the interviews with some younger folks, talked to someone who said, my generation doesn't look at Social Security as an investment. My generation looks at Social Security as a tax.
All right. Well, Stephen, we have lots more to talk about. We have to take a very short break now. When we come back, we'll hear from our listeners. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477. More on the future of Social Security in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Maggie Kirchhoff from Hollis, New Hampshire. I am the winner of the 2009 Summer Car Raffle. The Fusion is Mom's car. We allow my 16-year-old will use it a little bit until he gets a car of his own. And now that my daughter's home from college, she'll use it a little bit, but it's primarily my car. It drives just like any car. You do have to get used to that it's quiet when it turns onto electric mode. So we've had that lesson with all the kids, and they've gotten adjusted to that.
And as you hear Maggie Kirchhoff talking about her Ford Fusion, the one she won in a past summer car raffle, did you start imagining yourself behind the wheel of that hybrid car? If so, you really ought to call and get your name in the running to win this year's summer car raffle. Hi, I'm Brady Carlson. I'm here with Abby Goldstein. And the way you get in on the fun, the excitement, the raffle, the chance to win a hybrid car is to call 1-888-805-6477 or to visit nhpr.org.
It's interesting listening to Maggie Kirchhoff talk about the Ford Fusion, which is one of the choices for our grand prize winner. This year, she won back in 2009, and she was talking about her 16-year-old daughter, who's probably 19 now, and her daughter that's home from college, who's maybe graduated by now. We should touch base with Maggie and see how she's doing with her Ford Fusion. What would you choose? You could choose a Ford Fusion or a Toyota Prius, both really great fuel efficiency, both hybrid cars, so you'd be shrinking your carbon footprint and helping out on the environmental side. That is our grand prize, a choice, a Ford Fusion or Toyota Prius, donated in part by Grapponi Automotive Group. Get in the running right now to win one of these two cars, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. And Maggie, if you're listening, call and give us an update.
We'd love to hear from you. We would love to hear from you right right now, because that deadline to get in to win this year's summer car raffle is tomorrow at noon. That's 26 and a half hours, roughly, left to get in. The biggest hurdle to doing something out of the ordinary, out of the routine, is simply remembering to do it. So if you've had this on your mind for a while, right, the summer car raffle, I want to make sure I get some tickets, I want to make sure I've got a chance to win that hybrid car, then it's time to just put everything off for about 3-4 minutes and call. That way you don't have to remember it any longer. You don't have to try and come up with some complex way to say, oh, I will do this before the end of the day. You just pick up the phone right now and call. That's the easiest way to do it, at 1-888-805-6477. Maybe the web is more convenient for you at this time of day. NHPR.org. You'll see the picture of the car up at the top of the page, so it's very easy to find how to get your raffle tickets on the web.
We're listening to the exchange right now, a really interesting conversation about Social Security, which is a hot-button issue and has been for quite a few years, and we're looking at this from a bunch of different perspectives. We just talked a little bit about the history of Social Security, how we got to where we are today, and what it means for the next 20 years down the line, and how a new Congress might address the tax issues around Social Security. Every day on The Exchange, we tackle topics that affect your daily life, and you have the opportunity to maybe look at it from a different perspective, challenge your own thinking on an issue, call in, share your thoughts and your experience, post your Facebook comments, or send an email. This is a very valuable hour of the day for many New Hampshire residents, and your raffle ticket, your $100 for a couple of raffle tickets, goes a long way to help produce this program. So make that call right now, support The Exchange, and get yourself in the running to win one of our summer car raffle prizes. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Isn't it great when you can do something useful and something fun at the exact same time? You can help support programs like The Exchange, and you can win some prizes. I'm looking at that second prize, the Trek 7100 bike. And in addition to winning the bike, the second prize winner gets a Yakima roof rack so that you can take the bike with you when you're out on your car. Maybe there's a bike trail you've always wanted to head out and try out, but it just didn't work out. It wasn't practical. Well, with the roof rack, it's super practical. That prize donated by S&W Sports in Concord. Take a look at it when you buy your raffle tickets on our website, nhpr.org.
Yeah, maybe there's a staycation in your future. You're going to be making a road trip here in the region and taking your bike with you. But the key thing here right now on this very day is that time is running out. The deadline is noon tomorrow, just a little over 24 hours away. So get your tickets now before the weekend gets too far in. 1-888-805-6477, nhpr.org, and good luck.
Good morning. It's The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Mike Danielli. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from the Clean Bedroom Organic Mattress and Bedding Showroom in Kittery, Maine, helping you create eco-friendly sleep environments. Also on the web at thecleanbedroom.com. And from the Colonial Theater in Bethlehem, presenting the Klezmer Fusion, Innovators of the Klezmatics, August 18th at 8 p.m. Tickets at bethlehemcolonial.org. Clouding up today with a chance of a late day shower or thunderstorm. Highs will be in the upper 80s. Tonight, cloudy, showers and thunderstorms. Lows from 55 degrees north of the White Mountains, ranging to about 65 near the southern border. Tomorrow, showers coming to an end in the morning, turning partly sunny by the afternoon, high 75 to 80. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the future of Social Security. Stephen Olemacher is our guest. He's an Associated Press reporter covering Capitol Hill, and he's been writing a series on Social Security this summer. We're looking at some of the issues that always come up with this topic, and we invite you to join us. 1-800-892-6477. This is a confusing topic at times, so if you have any basic questions about how Social Security works, what some of the problems are with it, what you think about some of the fixes that are often mentioned, join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Stephen, let's go right to our listeners. And Steve's calling in from Portsmouth. Steve, thanks for waiting, and go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm a financial planner on my day off here, and I still can't get away from finance when I turn the radio on. But this is a great topic. I deal with this every day. Just want to make a couple comments. One is, I think we, and your guest is doing a great job of doing this, waking up America, and we got to get our heads out of the sand. When Social Security was designed, there were 40 people paying in to it for every person taking money out back in the 30s.
Wow.
I think it originally started, and Steve could correct me, but I think the original payroll tax for an individual was like 1%. Now we have a little over 2 people paying in for every person taking money out, and we're paying over 6%. The tried and true solutions are to, as Steve said, increase taxes, change the age. And I really got to advocate against that because it's been tried and it's failed because people are living longer. The more you increase payroll taxes, and as an employer, I don't want to pay any more payroll taxes on top of my already increasing costs, and it's a disincentive to hire people. But I think the other thing is most of my clients are middle class, dual income professionals, and they're the types that do make over $100,000. So there are times late in the year where they make a little more money because they stop paying Social Security, and that's when they can save for themselves. And these are the people that might be able to fund their own retirement, might be able to fund their own long-term care policy. I don't sell insurance, so I'm not trying to push insurance or anything. But the point is they could take care of themselves, but now we're going to take more money from them and not allow them to do that, or at least hinder their ability to do that. I think one of the solutions is to privatize part of it. And again, I wouldn't make any more money if this happened, so I'm not trying to advocate for this for my own pocketbook. But Chile, the country of Chile has done it. It's worked out well. I think it'd be great if people had access to the Federal Thrift Savings Plan, which is a 401k plan for federal workers. It is dirt cheap. It's 200 times cheaper than the average commercial plan that I run into out in the market. And it offers people an opportunity to actually build a little bit of wealth.
So Steve, let me ask you a quick question. Since you're involved in this business, and I appreciate you calling, the fear that people have when privatization is raised is, geez, look at the stock market and what's happened in the last couple of years. And what if I turn 65 on the day that it crashes? I'm kind of stuck with no value left.
That's an invalid point, and I understand it. But let's say the Thrift Savings Plan has target date funds. So there's a fund there that if you're going to retire in 2045, it controls the amount of exposure to stocks and bonds, and you can make it a very conservative one. We could say you can't touch it. You have no choice about this. It's going to this fund, and by the time you hit 50, maybe it's all bonds.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's all treasuries.
Conservative as you age.
We can debate this, yes. But what happens to people when they get concerned about this is because they're jumping in the market when things are going well. They're jumping out when things are going by. They're buying high, selling low, which is the inverse of what you want to do. So maybe this is a plan where they can't touch it, but they still get some exposure and some growth opportunity. And believe me, this is the key point.
Okay.
The biggest factor is the expense of these plans. And the Thrift Savings Plan is so inexpensive compared to what teachers have to buy, these insurance products that they don't even understand. They charge 200-300 times more than the federal program.
All right. And Steve, I'm going to let you go. I really appreciate you calling. A couple other people I want to get in on the line with us. But Stephen Olemacher, what do you think? An advocate of privatizing a small portion of Social Security. This has come up time and time again. President Bush was the last one to raise it in a big way back in the mid-2000s.
Yes, he did. And it didn't go well when President Bush tried to raise it. It was about 2005 when he made a big push for it. And it wasn't well received in Congress by Democrats or even most Republicans. However, there was one Republican who really embraced it, and that was Representative Paul Ryan, who is since been tapped by Mitt Romney to be his running mate. And so that issue has come up again in the presidential campaign. It's one of those issues that Democrats and a lot of the advocates for Social Security, it's a lightning rod for them. The caller makes a lot of good points about the rates of return that you can get from something like the Thrift Savings Plan over time. One of the issues with shifting money into personal accounts or private accounts over time is, I go back to the way Social Security is financed today. The people who are paying into Social Security with their payroll taxes are paying for the benefits that people are getting today. So if you were to take a portion of the taxes that I'm paying and allow me to put those in a personal or private account for myself, you're going to have to make up that money somehow to pay current benefits.
And that's transition costs, right? Is that what they call it?
Exactly. So, I'm not saying I don't know that it's insurmountable, but it is a difficult problem to overcome.
I'm so glad Steve called because, again, he's in this field and he's dealing with questions and issues surrounding retirement and Social Security. Just quickly, Stephen, your thoughts on what he said. It's time for America to wake up to this problem. What do you think?
Well, You know, it's funny. In Washington, there is no consensus on the urgency to address this problem. As I said, before, Social Security has long-term financial problems. And because I really don't want to scare people, because it's not immediate. It's got plenty of money to pay benefits this year, next year, 5 years, really for 21 more years. It's the fact that, once the Social Security has built up a surplus, just step back for a second. Since the 1980s, the last time they overhauled Social Security, for much of the past 30 years, it generated a surplus, collected more in taxes than it paid out in benefits. And right now, Social Security's trust funds are valued at about $2.7 trillion. They will increase for a few more years, even though we are now paying out more in benefits than we collect in taxes, because they also get interest. The trustees who oversee Social Security have projected that those trust funds will be drained, will be exhausted, is the word that they, the term that they use for it, in 2033. And that's where I talked about it. At that point, the system will collect enough in taxes to pay about 75% of benefits. Now, the issue is, we have 21 years to act. However, the longer we wait, the harder it gets. If you act sooner, you can do much more subtle changes that can be phased in slowly over time. You can give younger workers time to adjust their retirement plans to prepare for it. A lot of lawmakers would like to spare current retirees from benefit cuts, because it's very difficult to make up that income if you've already left the workforce. So, the sense of urgency. I talked to the Social Security Commissioner Michael Astru about this, and he said, he's a big proponent of doing something as soon as Congress can. He says, but it's hard to push that, because it's not like there's an immediate crisis next year.
All right. Well, again, Steve, thanks for that call, and let's take another one. This is Mike in Bellows Falls, Vermont. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Thanks a lot for waiting.
Hi. Thank you. I just have a quick question. I'm just curious that, in other words, most of the United States, a lot of people are married. So you got two people, basically, husband and wife, working most of their lives and so on and so forth. Now, I understand, let's say, if the husband dies first, God forbid, but if the husband dies first, the wife gets the husband's salary. But what happens to, I don't understand, the wife worked most of her life, and she has all this salary that's going in, and, the United States should have, like, double the money. You know what I'm saying? Because you got two people paying, and only one, you know what I'm trying to say?
So if the, let me see if I got this right, Stephen Olemacher. If there's a working, both people work in the couple, the man dies, the wife gets his Social Security benefits, correct, Stephen?
Well, sort of. I mean, it's often portrayed that way, just because historically, men have made more money than women. But it's not dependent upon whether you're the wife or the husband. What happens is, if both the man and the woman are working, they both earn their own Social Security, and if they both live to retirement, they can both get the money that they earned.
So each person is pulling a check after retirement.
Yes, exactly. So if one spouse dies, the surviving spouse gets the larger of the two benefits. So if the wife made more money than the husband and the husband died, she would just simply continue to get hers. But if the husband made more money, she would, instead of getting hers, she would get his, because she would get the larger amount. The other way that spousal benefits work is, say one spouse doesn't have a job or did not earn very much in wages over the course of their career. So when they come time to retire, to keep the math simple, let's say one spouse earned a benefit of $1,000 a month. The other spouse never earned wages, so didn't earn any credits towards Social Security. That spouse would get half, would get $500 a month.
Because he or she hadn't put anything into the system, but
under spousal benefits, you will always get at least half of what the highest paid person in the relationship got. And then let's say the higher paid person who made $1,000 dies, and the spouse that was getting $500 would then get the $1,000 that the person who died had received. So the caller is correct that you can pay into Social Security for 20, 30 years, and if you die before you're eligible to get benefits, and you were not married and didn't have any children, then that money just goes into the pot for everybody else.
Well, and here's the other thing I think Mike was asking, and Mike, thanks again for that call. So let's say there's a man and a woman, and the man makes more. They retire. They're both pulling down their Social Security checks. Then the man dies. Sounds like the wife gets his larger Social Security benefit. What happens to her check? Does it just go back to the federal government?
It does. It does. Because, you know, if you think about also, you know, how Social Security works, it's not just an investment program. In fact, I've had some of the advocates have told me, you know, it's not an investment program. It's an insurance program. You know, there are lots of other benefits for people who didn't necessarily pay into the program for a long period of time. If you become disabled and too disabled to work early in your career, you qualify for lifetime benefits. We talked about the spousal benefits. There are benefits for children. So let's say if a working person dies, working parent dies, and they have minor children, the minor children qualify for benefits. And so, you know, there's a lot of shifting of benefits around in the system that takes up that money.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks again for the question. And let's see. Let's go to Brenda and Ossipee next. Hi, Brenda. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question, and thank you for taking my call. My question is about children who are receiving benefits. I realize that there are children who are mentally and physically challenged that need these benefits each month. However, my question is about children who have mild cases of ADD that are receiving $700-$800 a month. There is no way in my mind that an 11-12-year-old should receive benefits, because there's no way one can tell later on if they're able to work. And I think if this has to happen, this money should be set aside in an account, so that when they reach the age of 18, they can either go to some kind of a school for training or use it towards living. But that's my question. Children are receiving that have mild ADD, and I think a lot of adults walking around have that. We still work.
Well, Brenda, thanks a lot for the call. And it raises a broader issue, Stephen. You know, there is a feeling among the public that sometimes people who get Social Security benefits don't really need them.
That's correct. There is interestingly, last year during the deficit and debt showdown in Congress, when they were trying to work out a deal to cut future spending, one of the things that they did is they increased spending for a program within Social Security that goes back and checks people who are getting disability to see if they still qualify. If you are so disabled that you can never work again, and you become 100% disabled, then they know that's for life. But for a lot of folks, you know, you can become too disabled to work, but it may not be a permanent condition. And so they felt, and the congressional number crunchers worked out the numbers and said, if we actually increase spending on this, we will save money in the long run. So, you know, that is an issue. The disability program has its own separate issues away from the retirement program, and they've been working on. There's a rather large backlog to get cases resolved, to get benefits. And that is something that they've been working on for a while, but I believe the commissioner himself would tell you that they still have work to do.
All right. Well, Brenda, thanks a lot for the call. And we'll take more of your questions and comments after a very short break.
I'm wondering if there's like an interviewing course that Virginia Prescott, Laura Kanoi, Diane Rehm have either all been to or instruct. I find them very engaging, very collaborative, much less combative or antagonistic than some of the talking heads. I try not to go out and do errands until the afternoon because I don't want to miss those ladies. They're a big part of my day.
Kate Bartlett is a listener and a contributor to NHPR from Henniker.
And when you buy raffle tickets during our summer car raffle, you are supporting the work of these great ladies and so much more. I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm here with Brady Carlson. It is the finale. Here we are, the last day and a half of the Summer Car Raffle, your chance to support all of the great shows on NHPR and get entered to win one of our raffle prizes, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
In case you hadn't heard, we have three prizes in front of us here during the Summer Car Raffle. Third prize is a kayak donated by Portsmouth Kayak Adventures. Second prize, a Trek 7100 bike and a roof rack donated by S&W Sports in Concord. Grand prize is a hybrid car. The winner gets to choose a Toyota Prius or a Ford Fusion. That's a great choice to have, isn't it? That prize donated in part by Grupponi Automotive Group. The deal is, though, you have to enter to win, and you have to enter before tomorrow at noon. That's the deadline, which is like 25, 26 hours from now. So just call right now. Take a couple of minutes at 1-888-805-6477 or a quick visit to our website, nhpr.org.
Brady's right. You don't have much time left if you want to get your name in the running for one of these prizes, the car, the bike, the kayak. The deadline is noon tomorrow, and you know how weekends go in the summer. You're probably going to knock off a little early today so you can get out there for your fabulous summer weekend. Maybe you're already on your way in from out of state to enjoy a weekend at the lake or in the mountains. Tomorrow at noon is going to be here before you know it. So don't wait till the last possible minute. Call now before you get busy and get those raffle tickets and get your name in the running. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And while you do that, while you get in to win those great prizes, you're supporting the programs that you count on, like The Exchange. And we heard Kate Bartlett talking about why she loves the interview shows that she hears on NHPR, from The Exchange to The Diane Rehm Show to Word of Mouth. And listening to today's conversation about Social Security, it reminds me that there are two things that are really hard to do in radio. It's really hard to talk complex policy issues, something that is as vast and fraught with complications as something like Social Security. And it's also hard to talk about a complex issue that has so many political connotations connected to it. Because when you start talking politics, you can start to get into some dangerous territory where people's tension, the tension ramps up,
it
people's
gets
emotions.
Yeah,
it gets really. But The Exchange can handle both of those issues very easily. You can talk about a complicated issue like Social Security without getting deeply into the weeds so that you're like, what are they even talking about? And they can talk about those political connotations without feeling like you're in the middle of an argument. It's a true conversation. The Exchange, able to do that every single day because it's listener supported. So when you buy that raffle ticket, yeah, you're getting a chance at a cool prize, but you're also supporting The Exchange. Call now at 1-888-805-6477.
Or online at nhpr.org. Raffle tickets are $50 each, but most people buy two. So what's $100 worth to you? Two tanks of gas, 1 month of cable and high-speed internet, one night out for dinner and a movie? How about a brand new car or even a new bike or a new kayak? How about supporting the news service that you tune in for every day, whether it's The Exchange or Car Talk, This American Life, The Diane Rehm Show, Fresh Air, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me? $100 of raffle tickets goes a long way to help us deliver this service to you. 1-888-805-6477, nhpr.org.
Good morning. You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our members, and from Precision Building Solutions, specializing in custom new home construction, additions, renovations, and energy-efficient improvements. Information at precisionbybruss.com. And from the Hanaway Rink at Plymouth State University Ice Arena, featuring open ice skating, weekend events, and fall hockey leagues. Information at skateplymouthstate.com. Well, it's a special day here at NHPR. Only a couple of days left in the Summer Car Raffle. Don't miss out on your chance to win a kayak, a bike, or a brand new hybrid car, and help support NHPR at the same time. Go to nhpr.org to buy your raffle tickets or call 1-888-805-NHPR. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the future of Social Security. We're talking with Associated Press reporter Stephen Olemacher on his new series on this topic. And we're taking your questions or comments about the future of this entitlement program at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. If you have thoughts about what might help improve the future of Social Security, or just basic questions about how this program works, you can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Stephen, I want to return to something we talked about earlier. We talked about the demographics of this program, that soon more older people will be pulling money out of the program, fewer younger workers putting in. You hear people say, Stephen, that Social Security could become, and this is a politically charged word, bankrupt. Now, first of all, is that right? Bankrupt meaning no money left?
Well, not exactly. It's not a term that I would use. So, you know, what's happening is that, you know, over much of the past 30 years, Social Security has collected more in taxes than it paid out in benefits, and so we have those surpluses. So right now, the surplus is valued at about $2.7 trillion. 2 years ago, in 2010. Because of the demographics, it's flipped, and the program started paying out more in benefits than it collects in taxes. Now, the trust funds, the surplus, will continue to grow for a few more years because it's earning interest. The Social Security Administration invested that surplus in U.S. Treasury bonds. So, however, the trustees who oversee Social Security project that the surplus, the trust funds, there are two trust funds, one for the disability program, one for the retirement program. But when you put them together, they will run out of money. They will become exhausted in 2033. Now, at that point, the system's not necessarily bankrupt. So, you know, what happens is, you know, as long as there are money in those trust funds, as long as there is a balance, Social Security has the authority under the law, in fact, the obligation, to pay full benefits to everyone who qualifies. Once that money is gone, and like I said, right now it's projected to happen in 2033, Social Security only has the authority to pay out the amount of, in benefits that it collects in taxes. And the projection right now is that Social Security would collect about enough money in payroll taxes and taxes on benefits to pay about 75% of benefits.
Right, as you said before. And I guess my question then is, from there on out, does it become 65% of benefits, 55% of benefits? Do we know?
Now, I believe the projections are that it kind of levels out for a while, because, you know, at that point, most of the baby boomers will have been retired. And, you know, these are, you know, long-term projections based on birth rates, immigration rates, and also life expectancy. So it might go down a little bit, but I believe, at least for the better part of the century, it levels out.
Here's another, again, sort of loaded term that you sometimes hear around in these debates on Social Security. And Stephen, that's the idea that the federal government has raided Social Security to pay for other programs. You sometimes hear that accusation. Is that true?
Well, what's happened is, so this surplus that Social Security has built up over time, the $2.7 trillion, you know, if you think about Social Security and the rest of the federal government, think of them separately for a second. Social Security took that money and, well, they did what they were required to do by law, but what you would expect them to do with the retirement nest egg of an entire generation, they invested it in the safest possible vehicle. They invested it in U.S. Treasury bonds. Now, if you think about the rest of the U.S. government, they did what they usually do when they sell treasury bonds. They sold those treasury bonds to the Social Security, and they took the money and they spent it, and they spent it on other programs. So that's why you often hear that Congress has raided Social Security. So, of course, you know, those of us who are not in the federal government, we don't think of these two entities as being somewhat separate. So, but what you have is, you know, one part of the federal government owing another part of the federal government. The issue is, when it comes time for the rest of the federal government to pay back Social Security, where are they going to get that money? They're going to get that money from either borrowing even more or getting it from us.
So that's the question. And it gets people's hackles up, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I get questions all the time. You know, is there, you know, that surplus isn't real. You know, that money isn't real. And, you know, I sat down for quite a while recently with the Michael Astru, who's the commissioner of Social Security, and he said, you know, his response is, look, These are Treasury bonds. They are backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. The despite what happened last summer, the United States has never defaulted on its debt and its obligations. And so, you know, I guess what you have to think, you know, for yourself to think, you know, do you have faith that the federal government is going to honor these obligations? And, you know, advocates for Social Security will say, look, if Social Security can't count on the federal government to honor its obligations on these bonds, then how can any member of the public who buys a Treasury bond, feel that they're going to honor that? And, you know, if you look at interest rates right now and the demand for U.S. Treasuries, the rest of the world still believes that the United States is going to honor its obligations.
Let's take another call if we could, Stephen. This is Jesse in Mason. Hi, Jesse. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 30 years old, and I have very rarely paid into Social Security because of the types of jobs I've had throughout my entire life. So my question is kind of twofold. First, what percentage of people fall into that category that they don't have to pay into Social Security? And kind of the follow-up question would be, would requiring everyone to pay into Social Security help or hurt the process?
And why haven't you had to pay in? I'm just curious, Jesse.
So I've been predominantly in education. So for some reason, I never have to pay in all of my pay stubs and my paychecks. I do pay into Medicare,
yeah,
things like that. But I don't actually have a Social Security part. And I think I maybe have a few hundred dollars that I put in predominantly from high school jobs.
Interesting. I think firefighters are in the same situation, but I'm not entirely sure. Thanks for the question, Jesse. Is that right, Stephen? I think I have heard that there are some professions who don't pay in.
Sure. Yes, that is correct. It's mostly government workers at the state level, either state workers. You mentioned teachers. They'll have some of their own separate programs. Now, back in the 1980s, the last time they overhauled Social Security, they brought a number of those people into the Social Security system in an attempt to get more revenue into the system. I know it's more than 90% of all workers in the United States pay into Social Security. I believe it's as high as 95%.
Really? So, that high?
Yes, it is. So it's not bringing more people in. There's not enough of them out there who don't pay into Social Security to have a huge effect on the system by bringing them in.
Well, you know, Stephen, just to wrap up with you, and this has been real interesting, and there's a number of aspects of your series that we haven't even gotten to, like how our system compares to systems in Europe and so forth. But one other question for you. Are there other aspects of this that you're going to get into in later installments of this series? We've talked about a lot. What else do you need to look at, do you feel?
Well, I actually have a story coming out this weekend on the options going forward. And so since we're getting toward the end, I'll try to leave you on a good note. The beauty of Social Security is it's fixable. I'm not going to say it's easy because these are difficult decisions. They are difficult politically. They affect a lot of people's lives. You know, raising the retirement age is a very difficult thing for someone who has a physically demanding job.
Right.
Raising taxes is never easy and is not popular. Certainly, if you're going to reduce the annual COLAs, the cost of living increases that people get, that's a difficult issue. However, compare Social Security to the other big drivers of debt in the United States, Medicare and Medicaid. Those are complicated issues and complicated programs to fix. The beauty of Social Security is you don't have to figure out how to tame the rising cost of health care to fix Social Security. The reason why some people say it's easy is because, if you do something, if you raise the payroll tax, with a great degree of certainty, you can measure the effect that's going to have on the program in the long term. If you raise the retirement age, you can measure what that's going to have effect. If you reduce benefits in a certain way, you can measure that fairly accurately. That makes it a lot easier to address than Medicare and Medicaid, where you're dealing with a lot more moving parts. So I'm not saying it's easy, but I have a story coming out this weekend that looks at some of those options, and really with modest changes and to benefits, taxes, or some combination of both, Social Security can be preserved for generations to come.
Well, Stephen, it's been really good to talk to you, and I want to let people know that your series on Social Security will be on our website, nhpr.org. Thank you very much for giving us your time this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Stephen Olemacher, again, an Associated Press reporter covering Capitol Hill. He's been writing a series on Social Security this summer. You can find it on our website at nhpr.org. Let's take a minute now to just check in with our summer car raffle.
Thanks, Laura. Hi, I'm Brady Carlson here with Abby Goldstein. And the number to call for you to get in on NHPR Summer Car Raffle and to win, to potentially win some great prizes is 1-888-805-6477. The web address, nhpr.org. This is your chance to support NHPR and get entered to win, but it's not going to last that much longer. So make your entry right now.
1-888-805-6477, nhpr.org. The grand prize, your choice. You can choose a Ford Fusion or Toyota Prius, donated in part by Grapponi Automotive Group. And, you know, maybe you've been thinking about trading in your car for something that's a little more efficient, like the hybrid car. Maybe you've been saving up to get a new car or putting it off because, well, it just might not be the right time. But you could get that new car right now for just the cost of a couple of raffle tickets for $100. Our summer car raffle ends tomorrow at noon. So you have time right now to get on the phone or go online at nhpr.org and get those raffle tickets. 1-888-805-6477.
You can talk to one of our volunteers in the phone room. We have Steve Soroff and Janet Levinson ready to take your call. They'll walk you through the whole process. It's pretty easy, actually. It just takes a couple of minutes. You'll have your credit card handy. We obviously can't bill you later if we're choosing the winners this weekend. And they'll take a little bit of information down from you, like your name, your phone number, your address, and then you're done. You're entered to win, and you can go about the rest of your day and the rest of your weekend knowing that you're already in the running to win a brand new hybrid car. That's a good feeling, right? To know that you're already entered to win. You don't have to have it on your to-do list anymore. That could be you right now. Just pick up the phone and call 1-888-805-6477.
And, you know, I don't want to bring you down right now, but I just want to be honest with you and transparent. There is a chance you won't win one of these prizes.
Spoiler alert.
I know. I'm sorry. But there's another great reason to buy a raffle ticket, and you hear it from our winners time and again. They didn't think they were going to win. They wanted to support New Hampshire Public Radio. So the $100 you spend on raffle tickets helps cover our operating expenses. It helps cover the work that our producers do to book the right guests and launch these conversations and the equipment that it takes to do it right. That $100 helps keep the entire state informed about domestic and international affairs, things that are going on right here in New Hampshire. So, yes, it's true. You might not win one of these prizes, but you'll be a winner because you're supporting your favorite public radio station. 1-888-805-6477, or you can get your raffle tickets online, nhpr.org.
Just a few rules and regulations. You have to be 18 years or older to enter. You can't work at NHPR or be related to someone who does, and you have to have an address in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, or Vermont. Mainers, we would love to include you, but it's a state law thing. We'd bring you in if we could. It's not for want of trying.
That's true.
Otherwise, you're good to go. You can get as many tickets as you like to increase your chances so long as you enter by noon. That's kind of the most important requirement. You can try and buy all the raffle tickets you want after noon tomorrow, but it's not going to do a lot of good. It's not going to get you a car. So call now at 1-888-805-6477. Drop by nhpr.org to check out the rules and regulations in full and get some raffle tickets while you're there.
And the raffle ends at noon tomorrow. Again, the deadline is looming. We will pull the names of our three winners and announce them during All Things Considered on Tuesday afternoon at 5:30. So if you want to hear your name on the air on Tuesday, get those raffle tickets right now. 1-888-805-6477, nhpr.org. Don't let this opportunity come and go. Get your raffle tickets right now, and thanks.